and they get it blown up. The Houston Rockets blow it up, deflect it away. They tried to get it to Adams, and ball game over. The Houston Rockets advance to take on the Los Angeles Lakers.
Butler against Matthews, gets it away, and no good. Do we have a foul? We do. A foul is called, and Jimmy Butler can win it at the line.
Here we go.
Got it.
NBA playoffs last night, some crazy finishes. You heard Jimmy Butler with the free throw that bounced all over the rim and in with no time on the clock. Very controversial call last night at the end of the Bucks-Heats game. And the Rockets find a way to win. James Harden making a defensive play because he didn't do much on offense. And the Thunder, I don't know exactly what... You know, it was good defense by the Rockets last night on that final play, but why the Thunder didn't throw the ball to Steven Adams, who was wide open,
if he just would have...
Mark Jackson, once again, was all over it. He said, they're not even defending Adams at the rim. All he has to do is roll to the bucket. If Adams rolled to the bucket, you could have thrown the lob and dunk and won the game with 1 second left. I mean, the Rockets were giving them that. It was not, I thought, good defense of plan, but it ended up working because the Thunder didn't take advantage of the weakness of that defense. The Thunder had opportunities last night to win. But the Rockets, they dodge a huge bullet, as you heard there at the end. And the Rockets move on. They'll take on the Lakers, and we'll look at the playoffs here in just a moment. But first, we have local sports to cover right now.
Yes, we have a lot of local sports actually today. In high school volleyball is where we'll start, where the Beloit Lady Trojans will open out their season coming up here later today. You can see those matches on the online video stream at the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com. They'll open out with Ellsworth first at 5 o'clock, and then Ellenwood will be their next match at approximately 6 o'clock there in Ellsworth today in the Triangular. And again, both of those matches will be streamed online at ncksports.com. I had a chance to talk with Brandy Paul, the coach of the Beloit Lady Trojans, and she's just kind of excited to get these matches in to see where her team is right now.
You need that game under your belt to just see how kids are going to react and how they're going to play. So I'm just looking forward to it, and we'll adjust and adapt as, you know, each week that we play. And we'll go to Ellsworth, and Ellsworth always has a strong program. They didn't graduate as many as us, and they'll be very competitive. And then Ellenwood, I think they're already in the rankings for 2A, 4th or 5th. So they bring back a strong team. So it'll give us a good gauge of where we're at and where we need to go.
Again, Beloit at Ellsworth today in the Triangular. Other volleyball teams competing. Thunder Ridge is back on the court. They take on Plainville and Northern Valley in the Triangular in Kensington. They'll start play at 4 o'clock this afternoon up there in that Triangular. So volleyball schedules are always posted at ncksports.com. Also, area cross-country teams will be taking the course for the first time this season today. The first meet starts this afternoon is at 3 o'clock. The Tescott Invitational, Lakeside, Osborne, Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas, and Pike Valley are all competing there at Tescott. And then Southern Cloud will be at Abilene at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And Concordia hosting their annual Invitational this afternoon beginning at 4:15. St. John's will be competing there. Yesterday we talked with Coach Ben Letourneau of the St. John's Blue Jays. If you missed that, you can find it on our Sports Ticket podcast at katycountry94.com. Here momentarily, we'll hear from Brad Mason, the head coach of the Beloit Trojan cross-country team. They're also competing today at the Concordia Invitational to open out their season. So, again, stay tuned here shortly. We'll have Brad Mason with us to talk about that. Also, today in local sports, the Beloit girls tennis team will be at the Clay Center Invitational, and that begins at 3 o'clock this afternoon. A programming note as well, high school football locker room chats have started. If you missed last night's locker room chats, you can go back and listen at katycountry94.com on the Locker Room Chat podcast. And then coming up this evening, we'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. We'll begin around 5:10 with those football head coaches. And if you want to listen online, you can get them at katycountry94.com this evening as well. Also here at Katy Country 94 High School Football Locker Room Chats, our first week of Locker Room Chats. We're looking forward to chatting with those coaches about the Week 1 games coming up here tomorrow night for those area teams. So stay tuned for Locker Room Chats this evening.
All right. So once again, our broadcast schedule posted at ncksports.com. And once again, we'll have the Beloit volleyball matches tonight with a live video stream via the Beloit Trojan channel. And you can access that at nccastsports.com. Now, our schedule for tomorrow, Dusty?
Yeah, tomorrow night we have high school football. We'll get things started with a Football Express at 5:40, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable on Katy Country 94. And then we'll have simulcast tomorrow night with our action. With pregame coverage beginning at 6:30, a kickoff at 7, Hill City at Osborne. Will be our game there, and then also online video stream at nccastsports.com. Beloit is at Republic County to open out the season on the Beloit Trojan Channel. We'll have coverage beginning around 6:45, kickoff at 7 from Belleville tomorrow night, and we'll conclude our game night coverage on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3, the local high school football scoreboard show, which is brought to you by State Farm Insurance. So stay tuned for all of that. That'll be about 10:05 as we wrap up on Friday night.
All of that'll be simulcast, Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Lake, starting at 5:40 tomorrow evening. Just a note here, junior high football and volleyball over in Beloit tonight against Phillipsburg. For the volleyball matches at the high school and the elementary gym, masks must be worn at the gate and at all times when inside. Temperatures will be taken at the gate. Please practice social distancing. Football games at Trojan Field tonight, masks must be worn at the gate and when in common areas such as the concession stand restroom. Temperatures will be taken at the gate there as well. So basically, have your mask with you or on you and go from there. And temperatures will be taken. If you're over a certain temperature, then you will be told to head back in the other direction and go from there. So we may have some video streaming of junior high sports tonight. Maybe at nckssports.com, via the Blitz Trojan channel. We shall see. We're waiting on a piece of equipment on that. Okay, this is kind of what we expected was going to happen at some point in time. Unfortunately, it certainly affects certainly Silver Lake, obviously, but it really is a bummer for Rock Creek. And Rock Creek and Silver Lake are supposed to play tomorrow night, high school football, but yesterday it was announced by Silver Lake that they have apparently a positive case, and so they will not play football next 2 weeks, Silver Lake. So Rock Creek on a Wednesday prepping for Silver Lake. We knew this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And now they're scrambling. Anybody got an open week one date you want to play on basically 24 to 48 hours notice? And you obviously not got much of a scouting report. Who cares? Just play. Mm-hmm. You know, just try to play, do whatever you got this year to get games in. And that's why I said we better get games in early when we can and then see how many we can get in. Hopefully we get them all in. But I think most coaches are realistic to say, odds are if we can get 6 or 7 of our 9 games in this season before the playoffs, we'd take it.
Yes.
We probably would take it. So Silver Lake's not playing the first two games. So Rock Creek in week one, tomorrow night, looking for an opponent, which I think is going to be very hard for them to fill that, but you never know. And then St. Mary's week two, they now have an open date. And there's actually links and connections through for all the ADs to know of all the cancellations or postponements or teams that are having to stop because of COVID so that they can all intermingle and say, hey, we got an open date too. Let's see if we can work something out. It's going to take really good communication to make all of that work. So there's the first example really that we have noticed here right off the bat in week one. And that's a school. Certainly that is more in the Concordia Beloit classification area. I know Beloit's 2A this year, but Silver Lake has been 2A or 3A depending on how the classifications fall. And St. Mary's has been a 2A school and at times, or 3A in basketball, and then Rock Creek has as well. So that will be interesting to see how they proceed from there. Bummer for not only Silver Lake, but certainly the teams that are going to play in week one and week two, and it causes administrators or athletic directors to scramble.
Yes.
Just like a fine, nifty quarterback, they're going to scramble.
Yeah.
We'll get the NBA playoffs and the Royals' lack of offense, and also college players opting out of the upcoming college football season. But first, Brad Mason is the cross-country coach at Beloit. Dusty had a chance to catch up with him.
Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Please be joined by Brad Mason, the head cross-country coach over at Beloit High School. Coach, first of all, thanks for taking some time to join us, getting set for the 2020 season. And first off, I know maybe things are a little bit different as you get prepped. Cross-country probably not affected as much by some of the new restrictions from COVID-19, but how's everything going in that realm, and how do you feel about practices so far for your squad?
Doing really well so far. Just really feel blessed that we can even compete. And it is one of those sports that probably not as affected. I know I have a brother in Colorado, and they came down. The decision was made in Colorado. A lot of those schools in his school district, which is Fort Collins, Colorado, they're online teaching But they are allowing, I believe it's girls' fall golf, tennis, and cross country, the three sports that they're continuing with, just because I'm assuming it's a lot easier to distance, socially distance those particular sports than maybe some of the others. And we're finding out now in the state that we're doing some things, the meets are doing some things that distancing some people and spreading kids out, you know, at the starting line, and maybe even having them covered that first quarter mile, and they could go, you know, drop their coverings and whatnot, and also limiting the meet sizes a little bit. I know we go to Concordia, and they made a ruling last week, no junior varsity, which is kind of unfortunate. I do have three junior JV runners, and they're obviously a little disappointed, but you got to do what you have to do. So they'll be, when we go up to Belleville here in a couple of weeks, they're planning still having a JV race, but just to kind of limit the numbers a little bit, and then just really keeping contestants and patrons and parents and whatnot away from that finish line unless they're covered. So yeah, you're definitely seeing some new rules put in place, you know, because of the COVID thing.
Looking at your numbers, like you said, you have three JV runners on the boys' side there. You have two varsity and then five girls that will be running varsity for you, it sounds like. What are your thoughts on that and how they're all looking right now?
Well, thoughts. I wish we had a little bit more out. This is really one of the lowest numbers we've had in a while. It was just 5-6 years ago when we were up in the 30s in terms of numbers. So definitely would like to have a few more out. But what we do have is pretty good quality. And so that's really good. That five that we have out, Amanda Noller, she's my one senior girl. Samantha Zimmerman is a junior. Abby Porter, Ariana Armstrong, and Jenna Belush are my three sophomores. So all five of these girls will be putting together a team, and we'll be competing for team medals and team trophies in cross country in the 2A through 6A level. You do run your five girls or seven girls, but you count the top five out of the seven. So we won't have a sixth or a seventh. So we don't have a lot of room for health issues or injury issues. So we want to keep them, pretty strong and healthy. Because if you're only running four girls, of course you're not going to get a team score there. But all five of these girls, were on that team last year that got fourth at state. So they're experienced. They've been to the big race. They're at Rimrock, and they had a really, really tough regional at Norton last year. So they know what it's like to run with a little bit of pressures, which is good. The three sophomores, I was, a little concerned, the first of the middle of the season last year because of inexperience, but now that's not an excuse. So really looking forward to what those five girls can do. And the boys, high school, Jacob Porter is my one senior, and he's hoping to make it to state his senior year. And then Cameron Sadler is a junior, Mason Thompson a freshman, Lance Lundeen a freshman, and Michael Boyle is a freshman. Lance Lundeen will be running varsity as a freshman, and so I'll be running Lundeen and Porter in the boys' varsity race.
So when you look at this group, one of the things that you don't have this year that you can probably become accustomed to is Hannah and Haley Burks on your team on the girls' side. But when you have girls like that in your program, and I know the girls and boys kind of run together sometimes, and they're around each other, how does that motivate, I guess, some of the younger girls coming up or younger boys coming up to maybe have some of that kind of success?
Well, it's a huge motivator, regardless of the sport. And the thing about with Hannah and Haley and why they're just truly missed is their work ethic. And you only get like Hannah's coming off. She was a state champion and a runner-up last year and got third her freshman year. So definitely in that top five, all 4 years, and sister not too far behind. And the only way you're going to get at that level in cross country is you got to be putting in the mileage and the work all summer long. Mm-hmm. And you always tell kids, it's the same way in football and pretty much every sport, championships are made in June. You've heard that time and time again. It's what you do in the off season that's going to pay huge dividends, come October. And they exemplified that. They were out there, every day, taking maybe one day off a week, which we like, but really putting the road mileage on. And also in the other conditioning we do, we really push a lot of swimming and a lot of lifting, a lot of weights in the off season. Because cross country, obviously we have hills and we have sometimes big hills, and the courses are just not flat, you know, flat and fast like an oval and track. So you definitely have to have what we call strength endurance. You need to have that endurance of a mile or 2 miler. But I'm not saying those guys aren't strong in track and field. They are. But you have to have the strength to make it up and down, you know, hills, you know, over the course of 3.1 miles. So it's a little different deal there. So definitely back to Hannah and Haley, you know, they exemplified, you know, hard work and that's really what you're looking for, leadership and setting a good example for the younger folks.
Brad Mason, the head coach of the Beloit cross country teams. Coach, we thank you for taking some time to talk about your team this season. Best of luck as you open the season at Concordia.
Okay, thank you very much.
Brad Mason, coach of the Beloit cross country team, and we were talking with him on the Honk and Wave Parade last week, and to his one senior girl and boy on the team, and I asked how much they run. Said about 30 miles a week. Said that's easy. I drive about 30 miles every day, so that's a piece of cake. Oh, you're running. Oh, that's a little bit different. I'm tired. I'm sweating now just by you talking about running 30 miles a week. But, you know, we talk a lot about football and basketball and baseball and, you know, team sports, volleyball. But cross country is a very demanding sport, too. You may say it's simpler to do. Yeah, it's simpler. You run, you know. But you have to be in tremendous shape. Pacing, there's a strategy. It's kind of like, in a way, I think cross country is a lot like NASCAR, auto racing in a way. People go, well, they really... Oh yeah. Well, how hard is it to, you know, turn left four times, whatever the case may be? There's a lot more that goes into it than you ever imagine, and the same thing applies across country.
Oh, absolutely. And like he was talking about there, I mean, depending on what course you're on, you're going to get some pretty steep hills, and some courses are going to be flat, some aren't, and you got to adjust to that. I mean, some one person that runs well at one course will not do well at the other one because they're not as good going up hills and then even down the hills. Like I would think, like, if I'm that tired and running that long, if I go down a hill, I'd just tumble.
I would too. I totally was thinking the same thing.
My feet would just lose it.
I'd be a snowball.
Bowling ball down the hill. And
yeah, I might actually even go faster. I don't know if I'll get back up.
But. Yeah.
I'll roll right into a tree. Yeah, Gershner has a concussion. How'd that happen? Funny story. I was running downhill and rolled right into a tree. Yeah, good stuff. That interview will be posted here in just a little bit at our website, KiwiCountry94.com, along with all the other interviews we've done with volleyball and football and cross-country and tennis coaches at our website. Once again, KiwiCountry94.com. Click on the podcast pages and go to the Sports Ticket podcast, and it'll be there. Okay, 2020 claims another one, doesn't it? We'll tell you more on that here in a moment. We start again or resume with the NBA playoffs. Let's start with the first game last night. The Miami Heat beat the Milwaukee Bucks 116-114. Bucks down 2-0. It's the first time a 5-seed's been up 2-0 in a best-of-7 against a 1-seed in NBA history. Jimmy Butler with the game-winning free throws with no time left. The Heat were up 6 with like 20 seconds left and somehow blew that. And there was, to me, there were two calls in this game that people are going to focus on. It's always going to be this way. You're going to focus on calls late in the game. I get that. The Chris Middleton three-point attempt where Goran Dragic was defending him and went straight up, that was not a foul. So everybody's talking about the last foul with no time left on the clock. That call decided the game. I disagree to an extent. Here's why. Chris Middleton should have never had 3 free throws right before that. Did you watch the game or see the highlights?
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that's a foul, in my opinion, at all. And Chris Middleton made all 3 free throws, to his credit. So the Bucks can whine and complain, Bucks fans, about the last call, but you benefited greatly from the call before that allowed you to be tied. So, of course, the Bucks' point of view is going to be, well, you know, we would have been in overtime had not for that bad call at the very end when Giannis apparently fouling Jimmy Butler on a baseline jumper in the corner. If you don't know the story, with no time on the clock, Butler went to the line, lane empty, no time on the clock. In an NBA, there is no one-on-one. You automatically get 2 free throws all the time. So he had to just make 1 out of 2. He slapped the first one in, and then he gets to shoot the second one, but it didn't really matter because they had taken the lead with the first free throw. It was a questionable call, certainly, at the end of the ball game. Don't get me wrong, but we always forget what happens before that, don't we? And so literally right before that, the Bucks shot a 3-pointer that was well defended, and there was no foul. It was a phantom foul, that one, too. And three free throws awarded to Chris Middleton, and Middleton made all three free throws. So the Bucks can, their perspective is, well, listen, if that last call didn't go against us, we'd be in overtime. We think we would have won. And the Heat can come back and go, you should have never been in that situation to tie the game, because you would have been down three fouling us, and we would have iced it at the line just like we did anyway with no time on the clock. And I get both points of view, but if you're going to be objective, let's just call it what it is, all right? You should pick up the game 114-111, and the Bucks' three-point shot by Middleton, by the way, was off. And then I don't remember the replay who got the rebound, but he got the rebound. The game's over. So the Bucks shouldn't even had a chance at the end to go to overtime. And you could argue, even further behind that, well, the Heat blew a six-point lead with 20 seconds to go. Well, part of that six-point lead was a phantom foul that caused 3 points.
Yeah.
And you can talk about the Heat having a comfortable lead early in the fourth quarter. It is true. This game was literally decided by a whistle. And I've said this before. I don't think any game is decided by one whistle or one call by an official unless it's the very last play of the game where no time's remaining. We've had this discussion. Last night, that happened.
Yes.
That game was decided by the officials. And here's my problem with it. To me, both of those shots weren't even close to being legitimate fouls. Are they technically, by the letter of the law, oh, he touched his back? How much holding and pushing goes on for a rebound? They don't call that.
Yeah.
And it didn't affect the shot. Butler already released the shot. I've said this before. Once you've released the shot, you get fouled after it's been released. I don't feel like it should be three free throws. You got fouled after you released it. But Jimmy Butler already let go of the shot. And then Giannis didn't touch him very much. A little left hand on the torso. And people flop. The NBA, that helps get the official to buy into the call. The play before with Middleton going up for three, Jokic went straight up. Middleton was leaning into him. How is that a foul on the defender when the offensive player leans into you? If anything, that's an offensive foul. I would argue, just don't call it. And so yeah. I really know officiating is very difficult. It is not easy. But usually what happens in these games is you let them play. And yeah, and I've always said, and I agree with people, if a foul's a foul in the first quarter, it's a foul at the end of the game. So why is the last 2 minutes we just swallow the whistles, don't call it? If you see something, it's a foul, you should call it. At the same time, they should be obvious fouls. To me, those were not obvious fouls. And no. So as a result, the game's marred by the officials. We're talking about the officials. Instead of talking about a great game, we're talking about the officials. On not one, but the last two calls that helped score the last 5 points of the game were directly off the officials. So that's the problem I have with it, is let the guys play. I mean, if a guy gets wiped out, gets hammered or hacked, yeah, sure. But I don't see how in the world those were fouls last night.
No, neither one of them. I am not calling a foul if it's me, but...
I think the one before it was less of a foul than the very last one everybody's talking about.
For sure. I mean, because he's just straight up. Mm-hmm. He, I mean, they're, you know.
The offensive player initiated the contact.
They're both there, but, right. I mean, defender's straight up.
Absolutely.
And he goes in, and then, again, like you say, I would say Chris Middleton kind of flopped on that shot.
Okay. They all do.
And you know, made it look like it was a foul more than anything else. And, yeah, but the one at the end, I mean – man, you really got to be looking to call that a foul.
That might have cost the Bucks their season.
It could have.
You're down
2-0. But again, you know.
I mean, you got more games.
They shouldn't have been in that situation.
Well, exactly. That's the next thing I was going to say. The Heat controlled the game again. They're the better team last night.
Yeah.
So, really, the Bucks got what they deserved, I guess. Of course, I'm a Bucks fan. I'm looking at this differently.
Well,
of course.
Sure.
And I'm not a Heat fan, so to me, I'm just being objective because I don't have any dog in the fight.
I don't care either way.
So Butler with the game-winning free throws, no time left. Then the Thunder-Rockets game 7 last night, which was just a weird and wacky ending too. And the officials marred this one as well. I hate to be rough on the officials, although these guys are getting paid well, and these are the best of the best. And there's no distraction either with fans, and people aren't yelling at them other than players and coaches. There's less people yelling at you. And maybe that's a factor in making these calls. I'm not sure. But last night, if you watch the Thunder Rockets game 7, you know, I thought the Thunder, they were going to win the game. When they took that hit that three by Alexander and Lou Dort scoring 30 points and hitting six threes, I'm thinking the Thunder are going to win the game. And at Chris Paul time, and James Harden had a horrendous game, and Harden has a history of not playing well in big games when it comes to closeout games. The history doesn't lie. His shooting percentage is awful. He becomes timid. He's not as aggressive. If you notice, Russell Westbrook was the one who was aggressive, taking the ball to the hoop and taking most of the shots and missing most of them, by the way, forcing it. Westbrook with 20 last night. Harden had 17. But when the Thunder hit the three to take the lead, 102-101, I thought the Thunder were going to win. Then the Rockets took the lead with like 40-some seconds left. No, it was about 24 left. They scored on a bucket by P.J. Tucker, and I thought, okay, well, the Thunder's still going to win. They got Chris Paul, and I trust him a lot more than James Harden or Russell Westbrook. But the Thunder's offense, the rest of the way, I think Billy Donovan's a really good coach, but I didn't really understand exactly what he was trying to do on a few of those possessions. Having said that, the Rockets played good defense, and that's, we've talked about it. The Rockets in the past have been a team that shoots a lot of threes, they score a lot of points, they live and die by the three, but they don't play a lot of defense. They played defense the last couple of minutes of this game last night. They hunkered down, so did the Thunder, and the play where it was a mad scramble, everybody's hitting the deck, and the ball goes back and forth, and then Chris Paul had about a 9-foot shot that he normally knocks down.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe he missed it. It was short. I was like, oh, man. But the end of the game is just extremely wild because the Thunder, I thought, okay, Paul's going to milk this down to the end, and the Thunder are going to win this ball game. And instead, it didn't happen that way. The ball was out of Paul's hands. And then Dort is wide open, and James Harden made a tremendous defensive play. And I've been very critical of James Harden, but Harden made an amazing play. He had to leave at the right moment. Tim Legler broke it down last night on ESPN, and I thought he did a great job breaking it down. Steven Adams, Harden was guarding two guys on the opposite side of the floor. It was just him and two guys. Steven Adams near the bucket, and then Dort, who made six threes. And so if he leaves Adams too early, that's an easy alley-oop bounce pass, a dunk, a layup, and the Thunder probably win the game because it was down to about 5 seconds at that point. Instead, he waited long enough, and then the pass from Alexander cross-court to Dort, and then Harden came flying out at him. And the other thing that Harden did a great job of is he went by the shooter. He didn't go into the shooter. He went by the shooter, and he timed it. I thought Dort should have been able to see out of the corner of his eye to pump fake and then shoot, but he might have thought, I don't have time to do that. Easy for us to say after the fact. But Harden made a tremendous defensive play with the block, and it was clean. It was legit. And so then they reestablished. And Chris Paul, by the way, the refs did miss. Chris Paul was calling timeout when Dort had the ball on the rebound off the block shot. Now the question, of course, is the timeout happened when his foot was out of bounds. Before that, I don't know. They didn't really cover that too well.
Yeah.
But when you really look at the whole situation, the Thunder and the Rockets really didn't play that well offensively down the stretch.
No.
Now give credit to the defenses, I suppose. So then the Rockets go down, and they make one out of two free throws. Thunder have a timeout, so they can advance the ball midcourt. And I'm still thinking the Thunder are going to win this game. Then there's a foul for Harden holding Paul, which you could call every single time in a game.
Yeah.
They call that before a timeout by Oklahoma City. So now they get one free throw, not two, because it happened before the ball was inbounded, which I wasn't aware of that rule until last night.
Mm-hmm.
So Gallinari, a 90% foul shooter, misses the free throw. So now the Thunder are thinking, well, we make the free throw, make a bucket, we win. They miss the free throw. Now we make a two, we tie overtime, we make a three, we win the series. And I'm going, all right, you're going to have this great play drawn up, Chris Paul. Somebody's going to get a good look. Somebody's going to get a good look. 1.1 on the clock. Alexander is throwing the ball in. And Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, by the way, are awesome at what they do. And Mark Jackson last night, Van Gundy wasn't on the broadcast, Mark Jackson accurately pointed out, and he said, listen, look at what the Rockets are doing. They're zoning areas, and they're not defending Steven Adams. If Adams just rolls to the bucket, he's got to lob a layup. And you go look, watch the still shot of that last play of the game. There is 10 feet in front of Steven Adams, who is looking at the goal. But the play, he must have stuck with whatever the play was. But yeah, there's where instincts take in a way. Now, does Alexander throw the lob and throw it over the backboard and they lose? Possibly. Does he throw it to Adams and he loses, bobbles the ball, and then dunks it and time's expired? Possibly. Do they make the play and they win the game? Possibly. Or tie the game in this situation? Not win it, but tie it. But they got no shot. They didn't get a single shot. The inbounder didn't do a very good job. They were all over Chris Paul. They missed a screen on the set. You think about details and the small line between winning and losing. When you don't set a screen, that blows up your whole play. And Steven Adams was wide open, but Alexander didn't throw it to him. Adams didn't roll to the bucket. He was wide, wide open. They weren't defending the goal, even though they were up two. Makes no sense by the Rockets. And so they made a mistake there, in my opinion. And then Adams, nobody can get open, so Adams has to come out three-point line. He's the only guy that Alexander can actually throw the ball to. Well, yeah, Steven Adams isn't a threat to shoot the ball from the three-point line. They didn't get off a shot. The ball was knocked away, and game over, season over. It's the little things, man, that make the difference. And the Thunder did not execute on the last few possessions of the game. And give the Rockets credit, they made the plays. Harden made the defensive play, the biggest play of the game. He made it despite having a horrendous offensive game. You have to credit guys. This hurts me to say this, but you have to credit Harden. Even though he didn't play well, he didn't hang his head, he didn't get all frustrated, or he probably was frustrated. He said after the game, I played like you know what, which he forgot he was live TV, which was great. And he made an unbelievable play, and it saved their season. If he doesn't block that shot, does Dort's three go in? We'll never know. Maybe. It reminded me a little bit of the block shot in a 2003 National Championship game when Michael Lee had a wide-open look, and all of a sudden, here comes Hakeem Warrick out of nowhere and blocks it. And we'll never know if that ball was going in or not. Because Michael Lee lined it up. It was all, I mean, might have won a national championship or tied it and sent it overtime in that situation. Instead, it was blocked. And it was a great play by Harden as well last night. And the Thunder going home. And the Rockets dodge a horrible, horrible media disaster. Because had they lost that game, Westbrook choked in the clutch, forced it. Harden disappeared, didn't want the ball. D'Antoni can't win with small ball. Can't win living dying by a three. Rockets made 17 threes last night. The Rockets made a horrible trade. They traded two first-round picks and Chris Paul and got beat by Chris Paul, and they picked up Russell Westbrook, and that's all they got out of the deal. I mean, there would have been unbelievable storylines had the Thunder won that game last night. And here's the thing, and this is what pains me because I was cheering for the Thunder. They had every opportunity to win it in the final minutes, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah.
And the Rockets deserve the win because they made the plays defensively at the end.
I'm just watching the end of this game, and I'm like, somebody going to do something here?
I was waiting for somebody to make a play, which Harden did on defense.
Yeah, he did. And you give him credit. He's been on the other end of that from what I remember as a Spurs fan when Ginobili blocked one of his shots.
That's true.
The game and really sealed the deal. Well, sealed that game anyway, and then the next game did not go well for the Rockets. But yeah, it's, I think, probably focus too much on plays that are made by offense.
Yeah, we do.
And you don't think about the play that Harden made as much. But it is a huge play. And, you know, somebody stepped up and made that play. But the Thunder still had their chances.
Yeah, they did.
Even after that block. You know, it was all right there for them. And
listen, there are people who thought the Thunder were going to be one of the worst teams in basketball. They wouldn't even come close to playoffs. They'd be a lottery pick, and they'll stack up on their picks. There are people who said they're not going to keep Chris Paul. They're going to trade him. They kept him. And they were, you know, one block shot away, basically, of being in the Western Conference semifinals against the Lakers, which I still think they could have given the Lakers some problems. I'm not saying they would have beat the Lakers, but they do have a big against Anthony Davis with Steven Adams. They've got Chris Paul, tremendous leader and a clutch player. They got some young guys that, you know, youth against the age of the Lakers. I think the Lakers, honestly, are probably feeling better facing the Rockets than the Thunder. That sounds weird to say because the Rockets have the star power, but I think the Lakers are going to sag off and let Russell Westbrook take as many threes as he wants. If I'm the Lakers, that's what I do. And then Harden, of course, he's a little bit streaky at times. But the Thunder had every chance to win. They still had a great season. They overachieved, no doubt. And I really have a lot of respect for Chris Paul and what he did. You know, handling being the head of the PA for the players during everything going on in the bubble and trying to play at 35 years of age. And by the way, he put up a triple-double last night, which he's the oldest player in NBA history to have a triple-double in a Game 7. But this time, of course, it was in a losing cause. So the NBA playoffs will continue tonight as the Raptors and Celtics game 3. Raptors in a must-win situation there. Nuggets, Clippers game 1 of the West Conference semifinals tonight at 8 o'clock on TNT. Both those games on TNT. And then coming up on Friday, the Lakers, Rockets game 1 and the Bucks Heat Game 3, where the Bucks are in a must-win, coming up tomorrow night. Rockets-Lakers. I got Lakers in 5. I don't think the Rockets give the Lakers a lot of problems here.
I'll just say Lakers in 6 to be different, but I'm pretty confident the Lakers.
The Rockets have no size. They're going small ball. Lakers have Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis doesn't have a monster series, and that's on Anthony Davis. Because there's no reason Anthony Davis shouldn't dominate this series. No reason whatsoever. And then you got LeBron on top of it. I don't see the Rockets having much of a chance in this series. It's just not a good matchup for them. But we shall see, I guess. That's why they play the games. Steve Nash is going to be the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Didn't see that one coming. Steve Nash is one of the smartest guys to ever play in the NBA and one of my favorite players. And if not for the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, he might have made the NBA Finals a few times. You know, Kobe broke the Suns' heart so many times. Steve Nash signed a 4-year contract coaching the Brooklyn Nets. He's not been a head coach before, at least obviously not that level. Or college or whatever.
Yeah.
He's going to get to coach. How's this for your first coaching job? Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving next year.
Yeah, I mean, when you have talent, it's going to make it a little easier for him in the league. But, I wouldn't complain about having those guys to start out in my first coaching gig, as long as it works out well and they work well together. We don't know that yet.
I saw nothing about Steve Nash being hired as a Nets coach. That's just like blindsided most people. Blindsided me. I had no idea. It was even... Now, you may say, well, he doesn't have any head coaching experience. That's not going to work. Steve Kerr didn't have any. Greg Popovich didn't have any. They're two of the best coaches in NBA. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Steve Kerr had GM
Mark Jackson
experience.
Didn't, and he won 50 games with the Warriors. What's that?
Said Steve Kerr had GM experience, that's it.
That's right. Popovich was up in the box and then called down to be the coach. That worked out pretty well.
Yeah, he was the same. He was in management.
Larry Bird didn't have previous
made himself,
head coaching
He was the GM and made himself the coach.
That's right. And Larry Bird was a really good head coach, one of the few superstars to be a really good head coach. Yeah. Like Kerr wasn't a superstar. Popovich, of course, wasn't a superstar playing. But, you know,
Steve
Nash was.
Steve Nash would be like the next one can be that guy, because Jason Kidd definitely was not.
No. And Isaiah Thomas wasn't. Magic wasn't for a short time. I think Nash has a chance to succeed there, and I think Nash has a chance to be Larry Bird-like in regards to his coaching career. I think there's a chance. We shall see. Interesting hire. Sad news, 2020 claims another one. Tom Seaver, Mets legend, Hall of Famer, dies at the age of 75 yesterday. He died from complications of body dementia and COVID-19. Tom Seaver was an amazing pitcher. He pitched 20 seasons in the big leagues from 1967 to 1986. One of the greatest pitchers to ever live. He had 311 wins in his career, ERA of under 3. Broke in with the Mets, played there for 10 years, played for the Reds and the Mets again, then the White Sox and Red Sox at the end of his career. And just number 41 was a very beloved figure, certainly in New York as well. He was named the NL Rookie of the Year after throwing 251 innings in 1967. He won 3 Cy Young Awards, finished second 2 other times, voted into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot in 1992 as a 12-time All-Star. And, of course, he was the ace of the 69 World Series champion Miracle Mets. Became the fifth pitcher in Major League Baseball history to reach 3,000 strikeouts back in 1981. At the time of his retirement, he owned the lowest career ERA in baseball history and a National League record for strikeouts with 3,272. He was a 10th-round draft pick by the Dodgers, did not sign, then signed with the Braves in 66 as their first-round pick. And his number was retired by the Mets, number 41, back in 1988. Tom Seaver, no longer with us, passing away at the age of 75. I saw Seaver at the end of his career, you know, and he still was a bulldog, you know, very crafty, had to change the way he pitched. So 2020 has not been a good year, man. We just keep losing these unbelievable people. It was Lute Olson, John Thompson, and now we lose Tom Seaver. The Royals, last night, they lose. You know, you notice how the Royals are working down our rundown of the show. Like, I sometimes use them early, but now it's kind of like there's other things that might be a little bit more interesting. Last night, they were down 2-0 going the ninth, had a chance until this.
First and third, one out, and Tyler Naquin drives one in deep right field. Back is Dozier, it's over his head, and gone, a home run! Tyler Naquin, second home run of the night, and that is a knockout punch in the ninth. The
Indians didn't really need the insurance runs because the Royals offense was asleep all night. Royals now 14-23. They lose 5-0 to the Indians last night at the K. And the Royal offense, one run over the last 18 innings. That's not good. Three hits last night, two measly singles and a double by Alex Gordon. They also struck out 9 times last night, so a third of their outs, they didn't put the ball in play. Mike Matheny, you can kind of tell he's getting a little bit tired of this lack of offense.
No, not much. Not much at all. And then a couple balls that we did hit hard just seemed to be at people, but couldn't put the hits together.
Nope. Right-hander Jacob Junis continues to have misfortune in 2020. He started the season on the injured list, activated early August, came back to make 2 starts, returned to the IL with back spasms. Last night, second start back from that back injury, he was pitching pretty well, throwing only 46 pitches over 4 innings, allowed 2 runs on 4 hits. But then Josh Naylor ripped a liner off of Junis's right arm about, what was it, 95 miles an hour or something like that?
They said 106.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Lucky he didn't break his arm. Although they're going to check everything out today. So Junis had to leave, so the Royals had to go to that already worn-down bullpen that has no Trevor Rosenthal, of course. They traded him before the deadline to the Padres. And to just make things even better, in the 7th inning, Kansas City Royals designated hitter Jorge Soler left as a precaution due to oblique irritation and mid-back tightness. Ian Kennedy likely done for the season with a calf strain weakens the bullpen. But other than that, good things. Danny Duffy on the hill tonight at 7:05 versus the White Sox. White Sox 22-14, a half game behind Cleveland. The Royals, they've played 33 of their 37 games against teams above 500. Isn't that interesting? Because we figured the Central, everybody talks about the AL East is so awesome, and the AL Central is not very good. Well, let's keep this in mind. Everybody's kind of playing their same division. So you could argue, I mean, the Twins got off to a great start. They have a really good record, but they're like 2 games out of 1st. Cleveland, their pitching is outstanding, and they just traded Mike Clevenger away, and they're still rolling along. They have a half game lead over the White Sox. White Sox are really good. And then the Royals and the Tigers are bringing up the rear. And then you look at the AL East, the Red Sox aren't any good. The Rays are really, really good. The Yankees were having a good run, and then they have a 7-game losing streak, and Aaron Judge gets hurt again. And so when you look at the divisions, the AL Central looks pretty solid, but at the same time, we got to keep in mind that these teams are playing each other. Now, the Tigers are better than we thought they'd be. They're at 500 right now, but the bottom line is this. The Royals aren't going to make the playoffs, and they've expanded the field to 16 teams. We've said it before. They weren't really expected to make the playoffs. Dusty said 18 wins. I had 23. The Royals are 14-23. It's possible they could do either one of those.
Might end up being right in the middle of that.
Might be. Might be about 20. 37 games down, 23 to play. The standings, the Rays have a 4.5-game lead in the AL East over the Yankees. Toronto is 5.5 back. Cleveland now a full game up on the White Sox. White Sox last night. They're now 22-15. The Twins are 1.5 game back. Royals 9 games out. Oakland leads the AL West by 2.5 over the Astros, and nobody's going to feel bad that the Astros aren't in first place because of their cheating habits. Yeah. Atlanta, 3-game lead over Philadelphia, NL East. In the NL Central, the Cubs up 4 games on the Cardinals. And the NL West, the Dodgers are up 5 games on the Padres. Dodgers with the best record in baseball at 28-10. But will it turn into a World Series title? We shall see. And if you look at the postseason standings right now, here are the teams that are in. Rays, A's, Indians, White Sox, Astros, Yankees would be the 6 out of the 8 teams. Twins 7, Blue Jays have the last spot. Tigers are only 1.5 game out of making the playoffs, believe it or not. And in the NL, the Dodgers, Cubs, Braves, Padres, Phillies, Cardinals, Marlins, and Rockies are the top 8 in the National League. Note that when you expand your postseason, you're going to have teams with not such glossy records making the playoffs. The Cardinals, the Marlins are both 500. The Rockies are 1 game under, and they'd be in the playoffs right now. And
they just got bombed by the Giants the other night.
The Giants are only a half game back, by the way, of being in the playoffs. And the Tigers at 17-17 are sitting right there, a chance to make the playoffs. That's why I didn't like expanding the playoffs. That's what we see in NBA sometimes. Teams with average records or losing records, like in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that's what playoffs is supposed to be, teams with losing records or 500 records. But that's fine. What's interesting is the Marlins, they were written off. Remember their team, everybody, they had to get minor leaguers and undrafted free agents to fill, and they're right there, a chance to make the playoffs. And the Cardinals, who basically had a month off, it seems, from COVID and everything else, and they're right there. And they've got a lot of games to play in a short period of time. So that's an update. All the standings, MLB.com. NHL hockey continuing last night. I told Dusty, The Avs are going to come back from a 3-1 deficit. Here we are. Avs won 4-1. Dusty had a chance to take that baby and run with it. He said the Avs could, but he didn't say would. I just changed one letter in the vocabulary, and now I'm going to try to look like a genius. Avalanche over the Stars 4-1. Game 7 set up between the Avalanche Stars. Stars were up 3-1. Avs have come back tight. They won 4-1 last night. That's the only game last night. Today, it's Flyers Islanders at 6 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Islanders up 3-2. And the Golden Knights of Las Vegas try to close out their series in Game 6 tonight against the Canucks at 8:45 on NBC Sports Network. Leonard Fournette is now a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. The former Jacksonville running back has found a new home. It will be with Tampa Bay. The former number 4 overall pick has agreed to, in principle, to a 1-year deal worth a max value of $3.5 million. That's a pretty good deal for the Buccaneers. Don't spend a lot of money and get a guy that can be a workhorse. Remember, the Bucs have some young running backs. They've got talent wide receiver with Mike Evans, among others. And then, of course, you've got Rob Gronkowski tied in. You got Brady at quarterback with the Bucs. You got an offensive mind coach in Bruce Arians. And they also signed former chief LeSean McCoy, so he maybe can factor in. But this is a good pickup for the Buccaneers. It makes sense. It fits.
Well, yeah.
It wouldn't fit the Chiefs.
No.
Which people had talked about for some reason.
I had no interest in Leonard Fournette on the Chiefs. Like, didn't even cross my mind. You know, some of these guys that get released, they're like, oh, he might fit with the Chiefs. Yeah, never even crossed my mind on him.
No.
Didn't even think about it. But, yeah, it fits with the Bucs.
It does. We'll end with this. College football, some star players, notable players, are opting out now. As we know, the Big Ten, unless they change their mind, they are not going to play this fall, or at least not until Thanksgiving or after the new year. Pac-12 is not going to play any of these sports until at least January 1st. So that leaves the three main Power Five conferences. That is the Big 12, of course, the ACC, the SEC. There are other mid-major conferences. Some are playing, some are not. But Georgia's projected starting quarterback, Jamie Newman, is opting out of the 2020 season. The Wake Forest graduate transfer made the announcement on Wednesday after multiple media reports. Newman enrolled at Georgia in January. He threw for 2,900 yards and 26 touchdowns for the Demon Deacons last season. He's opted out. So now the Georgia, who's supposed to be a national championship contender almost every year, they now have to scramble. Of course, they've got plenty of talent behind this kid.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to scramble and adjust. Just the other day, the top receiver in the country, Ja'Marr Chase of LSU, part of the national championship team, he opted out, but it wasn't because of COVID-19. Supposedly, the agents simply convinced Chase to leave before his third collegiate season. NFL rules state a player cannot be drafted until 3 years after his high school graduation. He won the Biletnikoff Award last year for the nation's best receiver, had 1,700 receiving yards and 20 touchdown catches. And LSU lost another top playmaker yesterday as one of their top defensive players, defensive tackle Tyler Shelvin. He's opting out, and he instead is going to prepare for the NFL draft as a redshirt junior. 10 Central Florida football players, 10, including two projected defensive starters and a backup quarterback, have opted out for the upcoming season. Knights coach Josh Heupel, former Sooner, of course, revealed that Tuesday, just hours after the AAC released a media poll showing UCF as the favorite to win the league title. Can we go back and revote?
Let's do this one again.
10 players opting out for Central Florida. But yet somehow they'll still hang a national championship banner at the end of this year. I don't know how they do that.
Let's put another one up.
Yeah. You know. We would have won a national championship if those 10 players played.
Yeah.
I'm making fun of Central Florida. They put that banner up, and but I understand they were left out of the playoffs, and they should have had a chance in there. There's no doubt they should have been involved. I don't disagree with that. I don't think they would have been national champions.
Yeah,
They should have at least had the chance, like you do in an NCAA tournament. But that's a discussion for a whole different day. Expect even more players to opt out as we get closer at time, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, and you know, I think they're ready for it and prepared for it too. The teams, so you know, they'll just move on, and whoever wants to play will go out and play if they can.
That's exactly
right.
That's
what it comes down to right now.
It really does. I'll wrap it up for today. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on The Ticket.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.